You are Locked On Jaguars, your daily Jacksonville Jaguars podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to another episode of Locked On Jaguars, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I am your host, Zach Goodall. Chris is at work today. He won't be able to join me, but you can make sure to follow him on Twitter at MistoCristofo, as well as myself at Zach_Goodall, and most importantly, the Locked On Jaguars handle at Locked On Jaguars. We are just, 10 hours removed from the Jaguars' embarrassing primetime nationally televised loss to the Tennessee Titans by a score of 30-9. It's the fourth time in a row that the Titans have beaten the Jaguars. Doug Marrone and the Jaguars head coach said it perfectly, that they've just got them figured out. And that put the Jaguars in officially below 500. There's no way they can bounce back from it for the rest of the year. They are now sitting at 4-9. The best case scenario record-wise would be 7-9, just a year removed from a winning record in the AFC Championship game. Here we are. It was just about as miserable of a showing as you could get. There are very few positives to take away. However, I will try and find at least a couple to share. But for the most part, it looked like a team that had quit. And I mainly say that about how the defense looked. It just looked like there wasn't much effort out there, whereas the offense put in effort because the majority of the offense right now is currently backups or probably won't be starting on the team next year. So I'm sure they're putting in effort just to try and get themselves some money this offseason somewhere else, or stick around if they want to stick around the Jacksonville Jaguars. So we'll break it all down here in a couple of segments, but make sure to go ahead and subscribe to the podcast anywhere you can listen to podcasts. You can listen to Locked On Jaguars, that being iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, Megaphone.fm. Go ahead and hit that subscribe button, keep leaving those ratings and reviews, and we'll get this thing rolling. So we'll start on the offensive side of the ball. One touchdown scored throughout the entire night against a pretty good Titans defense, not one that you shouldn't be able to score on, but still a decent defense that got a ton of pressure, given the Jaguars literally were not starting a single person who will be on the opening day starting offensive line next year. That being Eric Flowers won't be the starting left tackle. Cam Robinson will be back and healthy at that point, you'd assume. I'd figure Flowers might stick around on a swing deal just because he's filled in better than Walker did, and he'll probably be very cheap labor. Doug Marrone's talked highly about him, and if they can get him on the cheap, I'm sure he'll stick around as depth. At left guard, they had Patrick Omame, who they brought back, who for the most part I've always thought has been pretty solid. So maybe he'll stick around, maybe he won't. I'm pretty sure his contract will be up in March because the Jaguars didn't claim him, if I recall. I'm pretty sure they just signed him to a one-year deal after he was released by the New York Giants. Tyler Shatley has not been playing well at center, letting a lot of pressure in. AJ Cann has had a miserable year, and he's going to be replaced this offseason. I would pretty much bet on that right now. And Jeremy Parnell's heir at right tackle is waiting in the wings. I believe this is truly supposed to be a redshirt year for Will Richardson, so it was funny that he just happened to have a very minor injury that he practiced through in the week that people were starting to say maybe Richardson should be starting, and that injury put him on the season-ending IR. I truly believe that it was always going to be a redshirt year for him, was never going to take a snap if they could prevent it, and they took advantage of the opportunity to shut him down for the year. And, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, Josh Wells could not be activated this week against the Titans, and he was seen practicing with the team. So I don't think Will Richardson is getting behind whatsoever if this theory stands that he wasn't supposed to play and they took advantage to put him on IR. I believe that he was able to go out there and, you know, still learn and practice with this team, even though he wasn't allowed to play throughout the year, which might be best because they want to just groom him up at their own pace, and I think he'll be starting next year at right tackle. So right there, you have five backups slash guys that will be released and not with the team this upcoming year on the offensive line, and that did not help, obviously, because Cody Kessler was on the ground a lot throughout the night. Four sacks for a loss of 45 yards, losing almost 10, just over, I should say, 10 yards per sack, which is insane. There were times where he'd get the ball and just fall right down because, you know, pressure was getting through, like Taven Bryan, when he's got a clear lane, how quickly it could get to them. But when Kessler wasn't on the ground, I thought he played well. And I know a lot of people don't want to admit to that because they're stuck on Blake Bortles, you know, being better than he's giving credit for. Obviously, that's not the case. Otherwise, Bortles would be still starting over Kessler. Kessler, when he actually had the time to get the ball out, completed passes very accurately, including a couple of deep balls. One of them just went by the fingertips of Dante Moncrief, but it's one that I believe was catchable. I believe there was more effort that could have been put into catching that ball. And it's okay, there was another play D.D. Westbrook made on a deep ball. A lot of really tight window throws in the short to intermediate area of the field. Accurate touch throws, including the touchdown to Westbrook in the back of the end zone. There, for the most part, Kessler just looked accurate. I believe someone put this on Twitter, that he has more yards passing last night than Bortles had in his past two games as a starter. Take that for what it's worth. Kessler's not going to be the answer. I have a feeling they'll keep him either as a backup or maybe a bridge for a rookie quarterback, whoever they take come April. I would bet on them drafting someone rather than signing someone for what that's worth. Kessler, I'm sure, will stick around in some capacity for that because I think he's played well enough considering his circumstances to at the very least be the backup. I thought he was accurate throughout the night. Now, one person who had a very terrible game, and much like talking about Kessler being solid, no one wants to discuss that Leonard Fournette had the worst game of his career, by far. And we saw a couple of decent plays in the second half where he gained 5 yards. And if that's what we're calling decent, if that's our bar, then we got an incredibly low bar. In the first half, he looked miserable. Several unathletic plays, slipping up in the backfield when he had a wide open screen that he caught and lost 5 yards. A bunch of runs that just didn't work. He looked like Toby Gerhart in the red zone when they were within a couple yards of scoring. They gave him 3 carries on 4 plays, going for it on 4th down, giving him the ball at the 1-yard line, and he could not score. It was miserable to watch. And I do think that blocking in the offensive line is a solid excuse for, you know, pass protection and holes opening up. The entire theory with Fournette is that he doesn't need great blocking. That's what everyone said. He's a power running back that can just gain yards on his own by how physical he is. That's what everyone said since he got here, in a way to defend him when, you know, people would say he's big media, I should say, or non-Jaguars fans, non-Fournette fans would say, oh, Fournette's not good. The immediate excuse would be, oh, well, it's just because his offensive line sucks, and yet he's still getting 3 or 4 yards per carry just on his own. Well, that should apply to when he's also not able to run at all. And he did that last night. There were way too many plays that just died. Looked no physical effort from him compared to what we normally see. It was a totally lazy showing. I would venture to say it was the worst game of his career. And I think TJ Yeldon in the second half should have been getting a lot more of the carries than Fournette was getting. From the receiving standpoint, Keelan Cole had a nice deep catch, I'm pretty sure, at one point, and that was the first time I think we've been able to say his name positively for a long time. Yeah, it was a catch that went for 35 yards in total, but the best receiver on the night was D.D. Westbrook. I mean, he's ensuring his spot as the team's best receiver right now, the most athletic, the toughest, taking a bunch of hits from both sides right as he would catch the ball, getting hit in the chest several times throughout the night, making impressive catches, including the one in the end zone that I was actually a little surprised they upheld as a touchdown, but I think when you watched the replay and it zoomed in on his feet, you could see his left toe just touching the grass before his foot slid out of bounds, so they wouldn't be able to flip what they had originally called as a touchdown. But Westbrook, you know, I've said it since his past offseason, was going to see a ton of, you know, targets. I thought we were going to see the most improvement out of him compared to any other Jaguars receiver. And he's done just that. He's been the team's best receiver this entire year. He had 7 catches for 88 yards and a touchdown last night. He has had 53 catches for 641 yards this season and 5 touchdowns on the year. For an anemic passing game, I'd say that he's probably one of the few things that you can hang your hat on and say he's done a really good job. So, you know, hold on to that for the new quarterback. He's going to be the possession guy, the check down guy, probably the quarterback's best friend in his first couple of years, and maybe we'll see an expanded role out of Westbrook. But otherwise, I mean, the scoreboard will tell you just that. 9 points in general, and 2 came from the special teams on the safety, 1 offensive touchdown. There's going to be a ton of changes to this offense this upcoming offseason, and we'll be breaking that down in our third segment about what they're going to have to do next. But when we come back from this break, we're first going to talk about the lazy, effortless performance by the Jaguars defense last night. So now let's talk about the showing from the Jacksonville Jaguars defense. And I wouldn't even really call it a showing because they didn't show up. Sorry, I'm not very funny. We'll go ahead and get right to it. The Jaguars defense looked abysmal. They made Derrick Henry, who has not panned out well in Tennessee compared to the hopes people had for him, they literally made him look like Barry Sanders last night. I mean, it's crazy. He looked phenomenal. 239 yards, 4 rushing touchdowns. It's incredible. But the Jaguars defense, there was a 99-yard touchdown run, and no one could make a tackle. It looks like there was no effort. It looked like there was a lot of lackadaisical effort in coverage, in the run game, chasing defenders down, loafing. And, I mean, you can only talk so much about that. So I'm not going to try and pinpoint all the different plays that they did poorly. I do want to talk about some positives, and one is that Ronnie Harrison is going to be a star. He has filled in very well for Barry Church, had his first career interception, and he is a pretty sound tackler when he's out there. He makes very, very physical hits. I'm excited for his future, and I think it's been sealed that Barry Church is gone because he was made inactive last night. So that's that for Church's time in Jacksonville. He's going to get cut. They'll release him for $6.25 million in cap savings. It's going to be great. But let's go ahead and talk about, you know, a little bit more of the negatives. And it's not from what happened on the field. It's from what happened in the locker room. There were a lot of comments coming after the game. You know, players not really willing to take any blame. I mean, they do to an extent because, you know, they're not going to come out and say straight up, yeah, this was blah, blah, blah's fault. But Jalen Ramsey came out and said, you know, they didn't really throw it a lot. I didn't have many chances to make a game-saving play. I don't know what to tell you. We came out flat. AJ Boye said after the game, and this is a very telling quote, and this makes me think that the lack of effort on the field was because they've kind of given up on a certain coach. And it's that it's just seems like everybody is attacking our scheme or knows how to attack our scheme. Todd Walsh has got to go. I've been saying this for a while. People don't really love that idea. And, I mean, the defense is still talented. They took a step back this year. They're still a very, very good defense. The pressure is there. Not as many of the big-time plays, but the stuff that doesn't show up on the stat sheet is still there. But that's exactly as Boye says it, like, teams have figured out how to beat this team defensively. They run the exact same thing week in and week out, same exact scheme. You know, everything they do is the same. They send four. They barely ever blitz ever. They always run the same coverage, cover three. They always, I mean, when they play man, they're normally in off man. They don't like to press. They don't do much variant stuff. And teams have caught on. They know how to beat it. It doesn't matter how talented you are. At that point, you know, it's just what happened. Teams catch on. It's how the NFL works. And Todd Walsh, I believe, is Gus Bradley with more facial hair and a bit of a bigger body. Because Bradley's biggest issue when he was here was that he would not make any changes to his defense. He'd try and fit square pegs into round holes like Blake in the West Coast offense that I've talked about this year. Wash and Bradley do the exact same thing, and it makes sense. I mean, Wash is a disciple from Bradley. They've worked together for a very long time until obviously when Bradley was fired and Wash stayed as defensive coordinator. You see a lot of similarities. The exact same defense, the same stubbornness, the same expectation out of the players, and the players are furious, and they have every right to be. Now, would I rebel as a player? No, because I think that that could lose you your job. And I wouldn't be shocked if there are some guys that, you know, are unhappy with their role going forward or maybe even end up being gone because, you know, they've shown a little bit of rebellion towards the team. You don't do that. Not guys like Jalen. I don't think there's any chance Jalen goes. I think Jalen will probably get extended this offseason to kind of shut up any rumors about him potentially leaving. But I think that there's room for players to go. Like Malik Jackson has been kind of angsty since he lost some playing time. He was benched in favor of Marcel Darius and Avery Jones, as well as Taven Bryan getting a lot of time. He's the future at 3-tech. I think Church goes. I think that was kind of the nail in his coffin to be inactive last night. I think there's going to be some changes to the defense, not drastic because there is a lot of talent there, and I think there will be a lot of returning starters next year, but I think there's no way you can bring Todd Wash back, and I think that there's going to be a lot of players that might see their role changed a bit or be gone, because last night was the nail in the coffin. This isn't the same Jaguars defense as we saw in 2017. The talent's there for sure. I completely believe that. But, you know, the effort's gone. The defensive coordinator is trash. It's time to move on. And it is also time to move on to our third segment. We're going to talk about what the Jaguars need to do immediately. What can the Jaguars do to fix this now? Well, they can't, because the season's gone and there's going to be some rebuilding to do this offseason, for sure. Going to be coaches gone, I'd assume. Probably a general manager gone, a new quarterback in-house, some new offensive weapons, stuff like that. But in the immediate future, what they need to do is fire Dave Caldwell, and I think that happens. I think that happens sooner than later. I don't think they make a flashy hire. I think they replace him with someone in-house. I would assume that be Chris Polian. He's served GM roles, executive scout roles. He's been the director of player personnel here since Caldwell came around. He just seems like a fit because he's done a solid job helping out in free agency. And I don't think the Jaguars want to blow this up, like I've said before. I don't think they want to just totally blow everything up. Coach is gone, everyone gone. They're a year removed from the AFC Championship game. Even with how bad this year's been, I don't think they want to admit, like, wow, this completely 100% backfired. They just want to make quick fixes that they can get with people they're somewhat comfortable with. And that also leads me to believe that Marone stays, which I don't need to go on about. I think he's Tom's guy. Tom Coughlin has had a big, you know, belief in Marone. He's made that very public that he trusts Marone as one of his guys. The reports that came out when Marone got the full-time job that it was between Marone and McDaniels, that being Josh McDaniels of the New England Patriots, for Coughlin. So I think Marone stays. I think Chris Polian probably just takes the promotion so they don't have to make this a big GM search or a distraction. They can just get right to work on what they want to do this offseason. And that means the quarterback, fixing the offense, stuff like that. Like I said in the previous segment, I also think Todd Wash is gone. I don't know if they make that firing now, considering they just fired their offensive coordinator a couple of weeks ago. Just might be too many changes to the coaching staff with three games left in the season. However, I wouldn't be mad about it either, because at the end of the day, the playoffs are gone. You're not turning this into a winning record or even a 500 record. They've solidified a losing record for the year. The changes are inevitable. The defense has given up. I think Wash has got to go for the sake of this defense. I feel like they might just go ahead and promote the secondary coach, Perry Fuel, because he's been a defensive coordinator before. The secondary is obviously one of the strongest parts of this team. He's a Coughlin guy. He's worked with Coughlin for a very long time. So Coughlin might just want to go ahead and make that promotion. But I would probably look at outside guys. I think the offensive coordinator position will probably stay with Milanovic, because Kessler has looked somewhat decent on the field. And I think that's all Milanovic is really needed. Win or lose, as long as Kessler can look decently accurate. They've been able to hit on more deep balls. They hit on more deep balls last night than I've seen them do in weeks. And I'm pretty sure they only hit on like one, maybe two. So that tells you just about as much as they needed to do to get a little bit of vertical going. If they had a great quarterback, I'm sure they could do a lot more of it. But I think Milanovic, even though they might not be scoring, I think he's doing more than people realize that could be the bare minimum for him to get the offensive coordinator job. But look around for a defensive coordinator. Mike Pettine is on his way out of Green Bay, by the looks of it, as Mike McCarthy was fired last week. He's a guy that I've been told that he's close with either Coughlin or Marone, and he brings a hybrid 4-3-3-4 scheme that I think would utilize these players better. It gives them more versatility. Teams won't exactly know what to expect, and that could just bring the talent out. And I think that would be very important in a way to save this defense. So he'd be a guy I'd personally want over an inside hire, but I would also understand if they did an inside hire. So essentially, I mean, you're looking at three open positions. I think Coughlin is as good as safe. There's no way they could let him go at this point. I think that Marone is going to be safe. He's Tom's guy. But you change at GM, You change the defensive coordinator. You probably keep Milanovic at offensive coordinator. But we'll see. I'd figure a Caldwell firing will come first because you look at it as Blake's gone. The team's miserable. He, in 6 years, has only had one winning record. And the Jaguars are going to have to release a lot of talent, or at least a couple of talented players. Maybe Malik Jackson is the biggest one right now, just to save themselves from the Blake Bortles dead cap hit that's coming. And the dead cap hit, obviously, from Blake and his total failure of a season is the nail in the coffin for Caldwell. So I think that's the immediate move they'd have to make. And it makes sense over making yet another mid-season coaching change before the season ends. I just think that's probably the best thing for them to do so Polian can get ahead on what he needs to do this offseason. And they'll go from there. Then that should pretty much do it for this episode of Locked On Jaguars. Stay tuned, as I'd figure Jaguars news will probably be on the way very soon. And make sure to subscribe anywhere you can listen to podcasts. You can listen to Locked On Jaguars. Just look up on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, Megaphone FM, the free listening app we use. Anywhere you can listen to podcasts, you can listen to us, and you can check out the site. More scouting reports coming your way. We'll be on top of any breaking news that comes at any point soon. And we'll just go from there. Go Jaguars.